You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
This podcast is brought to you by Voyage AC.
So what do you think?
About the dress or the hair? Because both are lovely.
Thank you. But I'm talking about my neck. Smell right here. Do you know what that is?
Oh, I know that perfume. I like that perfume.
Yeah. It's called Dirty Whore.
Of course.
Yeah. And it has notes of rose and amber that are just super sexy. Voyage AC has all these surprising scents, beautiful scents, incredible candles, diffusers, gorgeous face, body, and home products. So how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find Voyage AC on our website at theonlyonepod.com, or you can go to www.voyageac.com directly. That's VoyageeTCIE.com.
And as you know, Melanie is willing to give my friends and family discount, which is really just supposed to be for me, but she's giving it to all our listeners right now, right? Mm-hmm. That's 15% off everything you buy. I use it all the time.
All you need to do is enter the code HON, that's HUN, at checkout.
That's right. All you have to do is enter HUN when you make your purchase. Voyage AC is the ultimate luxury blend of travel, design, and sense. Hi, we're bringing you a special episode today. In August of last year, I went on the Dr. Phil show, some of you saw that, to talk about critical race theory. And I went on the show with my friend Sarah Dean of the Shameless Mom Academy. She flew down from Seattle to sit next to me, and we were on the pro-critical race theory side. Sarah invited me on her show, the Shameless Mom Academy, in February of this year to talk about that experience. And it was such a great conversation that Scott and I really wanted to share it with you. So I hope you enjoy it as much as we do, and enjoy the show.
This is the Shameless Mom Academy episode 626. Show notes for this episode, including any links mentioned in the episode, can be found by going to shamelessmom.com and clicking on episode 626. Welcome to the Shameless Mom Academy. I'm your host, Sarah Dean. I'm here to give you and other passionate, driven, unapologetic moms tools, resources, and a little bit of humor to help you lead more positive, powerful, and purposeful lives every damn day. One of the best things about the Shameless Mom Academy is our community, so be sure to join us in our free private Facebook group to connect with other shameless moms just like you. You can find us over at shamelessmom.com/Facebook. All right, let's dive into today's episode. Happy Monday, friends. Today's a special Monday episode. Not a typical Monday episode. Typically, Mondays are just me. And today I have a guest. And this is not an interview as much as it is a conversation, but it's a conversation that I have been wanting to share because it's around an event that happened recently. I was on the Dr. Phil show, if you didn't know. That happened back in January. We recorded that
in August. And I got to do that because of my dear friend, Laura Cathcart Robbins. And I wanted to talk about this during Black History Month, because I think that we're in this moment where we are in the conversation already. And Laura and I went on the Dr. Phil show to talk about critical race theory. So why not talk about critical race theory in Black History Month? It's pretty timely. So this all started back in August of 2021 when I got a text from Laura. I got this text actually while I was just about to wrap up my Monday call with our members inside Momentum Mamas. And the text said this: "Sarah, I know this is crazy, but I'm going on the Dr. Phil show on Wednesday to talk about CRT. And they've asked me if I know of any white moms who might be willing to speak as an ally. And I thought of you. Would this be something you would consider?" So I thought about this for a solid 30 seconds, immediately felt like I might vomit. And then I said yes. And the next day I flew to LA to record the show. It was a massive whirlwind around a huge topic. Should critical race theory be taught in schools? So I asked Laura if she would come on the show for her third time. It's her third time here on the Shameless Mom Academy to have a conversation around our experience on the show, what it was like to just record a talk show, and then also around the conversation we had on the show around critical race theory in America. If you're not familiar with Laura, let me tell you a little bit about her, because she is such a phenomenal woman. She's the host of the popular podcast, The Only One in the Room, which you must subscribe to. She's also the author of the forthcoming Atria Simon & Schuster memoir, Stash, due out in the spring of 2023, and I'm dying to read every word. She's been active for many years as a speaker and school trustee, and is credited for creating the Buckley School's nationally recognized Committee on Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Justice. Her recent articles in HuffPo and The Temper on the subjects of race, recovery, and divorce have garnered her worldwide acclaim. She is an LA Moth Story Slam winner and currently sits on the advisory boards of the San Diego Writers Festival and the Outliers HQ Podcast Festival. In this conversation, Laura and I dig into why each of us said yes to appearing on Dr. Phil, some of the behind-the-scenes surprises while taping the show, what critical race theory actually is, our takeaways from the conversation that we had with six other guests on the show, all of whom had very strong opinions and some were very opposed to our opinions, what the media is actually talking about when they talk about critical race theory in schools, Steve Bannon's involvement in creating an intentionally divisive conversation for conservatives to more easily pave the road to the White House. I did not know this until Laura shared this with me today, and it was fascinating. And this is something that relates to critical race theory, but it actually relates to some other things as well. And I thought this was like a huge aha light bulb moment. Then we talk about what's actually being taught in school that's being misrepresented as critical race theory. And we talk about why age-appropriate race education is crucial in schools. So we dig into all sorts of things. We have a few good laughs in here, and we dig into some really heavy, big things as well. So I think you're going to enjoy this conversation. I think you're going to enjoy learning what it was like to be on a talk show, but also listen in and hear kind of what we learned from listening to so many different opinions and some of the interesting things that we found where there was overlaps in opinions and overlaps in beliefs in people that we thought we would be really opposed to when it kind of came to what they thought on paper. I think you're going to learn a lot from this conversation. I think you're going to have some good takeaways, and you might want to listen more than once. So with all that said, please welcome back to the Shameless Mom Academy, my friend, Laura Cathcart Robbins. Laura, welcome back to the Shameless Mom Academy. I'm so excited to have you here again for the third time.
Me too. I love your show so much. You know, I love you. You know how I feel about you. You can't keep me away.
Oh my gosh. The feeling is so mutual. Anytime I think either of us can think of a reason to have a conversation, we're like, this is a good excuse to have a conversation. Let's do it.
Absolutely.
So today we're going to do a little bit of a different kind of conversation. Typically when I have guests and when I've had you in the past, it's me interviewing you and you showcasing your brilliance in all these different ways. But today we're going to talk about our experience going on the Dr. Phil show together.
Yes.
Which was a wild experience. And so we'll dig into how that all came to be, which was all started with you. And then we're going to talk through some questions that we set up in advance, but we did not compare answers in advance. So we don't know what the other person is going to say, which will make it really fun.
I mean, I have some ideas about how you might answer some of it, but we didn't really download together.
I like had to go immediately to the airport.
Yeah.
So I went to the airport. Your dad was there, who I want your dad to adopt me. He is the nicest guy. So you went off with your dad. I went to the airport, and then we just waited for months for the show to go live.
Oh my goodness. It spanned 2 years.
Really, they told us it'd be like 2 to 4 weeks, and it was like 4 months, and we both were like, this is never happening.
Right. I was like, you know, I had to get cool with that. At least we had the experience. But
yeah,
then it aired in 2022.
Yes, it was so exciting.
Yeah.
So, okay, I want you to tell us, let's talk about how this transpired and why you said yes, because this invitation to be on the show really started with you.
Okay, so I wrote an article for HuffPo on critical race theory, or so I thought. And, you know, what I was responding to at the time, and from what I could really just, what happened was I didn't know what critical race theory was. And I didn't know why everybody was so angry about it. So I did some research and found that what I discovered at that point, and this was summer of 2021, what I thought critical race theory was when I wrote the article was the work that I do in schools, which is DEIJ work, diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice. And the teachings of how Africans came to this country and then our history since we've been here. That was the impression I had about critical race theory. So I was like, of course, it should be taught in schools. That doesn't make any sense for to leave out a portion of a whole population of Americans in our schools. We must teach this in school. So I wrote an article about it. And, you know, HuffPost is really funny. Some of the articles go viral, some don't. This one happened to. And it caught the attention of one of the producers at the Dr. Phil show, who I think it was a... You'll tell me because I don't remember exactly, but I'm pretty sure it was a Saturday.
Yes, it was a Saturday when you, you got the call. I remember this time frame. You got a call on Saturday.
Yeah.
And you live in LA.
I live in Los Angeles. Yeah.
And it's filmed in LA.
It's filmed here at the Paramount Studios here. And so they called and said, we'd love for you to come on the show and talk about this subject. We loved your article. But the taping is Wednesday. And would you be willing to do that? And I have to admit, I had not watched the Dr. Phil show. So, I mean, I know Dr. Phil. I knew him from Oprah. Mm-hmm. I know him from television. You know, he's been on quite a few shows, but I hadn't watched an episode of his show. So my impression of it was that it might be more, I want to say Jerry Springer-ish, but I don't know. There's probably a better word.
The same.
Yeah.
I had the same, like, is this going to be Jerry Springer?
Yeah. So I was just like, I wanted to do some more research, but they needed a yes or a no at that moment, because otherwise they needed to fill it with another guest because they were talking about the subject. And so I asked them for an hour. I called a couple people, including my agent, my literary agent, like, do you think this is a good idea? And my editor at the Huffington Post has been a guest on Dr. Phil. And so I asked her about her experience, and both of them were like, yeah, do it. Why not? You know, you're articulate, you'll stand your ground. I don't think that you'll come off looking badly. So I said yes. And then they called right back. I mean, not right back, but probably an hour later, and said, we'd like to have a white mom who is also pro CRT, critical race theory. Do you know of any? And the first person I thought of was you. And I said, yeah, I do. But she lives in Seattle. I said, let me try to think of some people that live here. And I couldn't, which is a sad commentary on my life, I guess, that I couldn't think of any other white moms that would be willing to, and actually is not. It's not that I don't know a lot of white moms who are pro CRT, but moms that would be able to talk about it and defend it and, you know, assert it as something that was important. And that's a particular kind of person. And so I didn't know anybody who would be able to do that as well as you. And so when I said she's in Seattle, they said, can we get her phone number? And so then you take over. Tell me what happened then.
So you texted me on a Monday. I remember it very specifically because I was just finishing up this Monday call I do every Monday with my membership community. And I get a text from you that's like, hey, how are you? Any chance you want to do the Dr. Phil show with me? And I'm like falling out of my chair. Like, what? So in my mind, I'm like, they must need like via Zoom to like pop in and say something. And so I think I called you right away. I was like, what is happening? So you told me kind of everything you just said, like what they needed, what they were looking for. And it was definitely like a heart racing moment. Like, I want to say yes to this. I feel very unqualified. I'm going to need to do some research on CRT because I feel like I know I want to defend it, but I also like really want to know my stuff if I'm going to defend it. And So you said the producers will call you. They're going to call you tonight.
Right.
And you can get more information. So I was like, okay, well, then they never called that night. So I went to bed and the next morning I woke up and I'm like, well, they must've found someone else in LA. No big deal. And then at like 10 a.m. on Tuesday, my phone lights up and it says Dr. Phil in all caps. And I'm like, what? I'm like very tentatively answer. I'm like, hello.
And Dr. Phil calling.
Yeah, it was someone from the show, someone from the producer or something. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to do an interview. They're like, can we interview you? If you're interested in coming and talking about this, like, could you get on a plane today? And then can we do like a 15-minute interview with you right now just to see like, if we think you'd be a good fit. So they do the whole interview. It felt like a history test that I did not study for. Like right? They asked me like all these questions about American history and like my opinion on them and like facts and stats. And I was like, I clearly failed the test. And at the end, the woman said, she goes, okay, thank you very much. We'll call you back in 15 minutes and let you know. And I was like, well, clearly by your flat affect, I did not make the cut. And they called back in like 3 minutes and they were like, can we book you a ticket?
Wow.
So it happened. And then there, all sorts of chaos ensued to get me on a plane because I had to get a COVID test.
And you also had to shoot the video.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So they said, you need to go get a COVID test right now. And so I'm driving to get a COVID test and they call again. And they're like, also before you get on this plane in a couple hours, mind you, I haven't flown since COVID. So I'm like, it's like a whole nother layer of stress and chaos, but I'm looking, driving all over town. I have them on speakerphone. And the guy is like, when you get home, could you just really quick shoot us a series of videos? And he starts listing off, like, maybe one of them could be like you like eating lunch and then like another video of you like sitting at your computer and another video of you playing with your kid, who my kid was not even home that day, like all of these things. And I finally was like, can you put this in an email? Like, I'm not going to remember all these videos. And also I have to be on a plane in like 2 hours and I can't get a COVID test. So he sends me this email and it was literally like 18 different things he wanted. And I called back and I was like, I can do the COVID test or the videos. Mm-hmm. So he said, go home and do a video, which I did. And then they COVID tested me.
Too.
Thank you. They COVID tested me when I landed in LA. So yeah, it was like, I didn't have time to really think about it. I did say to them though, is this going to be a Jerry Springer thing? I said, I'm hesitant because I know this is a heated topic.
Yes.
And the topic is too important to me for it to be trivialized. And like, I'm not in this for drama around it. And they were like, no, absolutely. We really want a well thought out, educated conversation on the topic. And I was like, okay, then I'm in. The other thing reason I said yes was at first I was like, well, I don't want to take the spot of like Black moms who want to talk about this. Like that seems more appropriate. But then they said, well, we can't really find any white moms who want to talk about it. And I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was really shocking to me too.
Me too. Especially in the sea of blue that is Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And to not be able to find a white mom who'd be willing. I mean, granted, this is short notice, blah, 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 blah. But still, it seemed like there would have been a bevy to choose from. Mm-hmm. People lining up to talk about this.
Yeah.
From your perspective.
Yeah. It was, that piece was really surprising. They had a teacher come on, Taylor, and they said the same thing to her. They were like, we can't find a teacher who will be pro either, or who is pro CRT. So it was really interesting. But that kind of brings us to that definition around like people being pro and con, and which we'll dig into in a minute, because I think that the distinctions around the definition are really important and people's understanding of that. Before we kind of dig into what happened while we were there, let's talk about behind the scenes, because people might want to know. Tell us a little bit about your behind the scenes experience and if there were any surprises for you.
Well, I got to say, one of my favorite behind the scenes moments was you discovering that the wardrobe we walked back and forth in front of was the This Is Us wardrobe and getting like trying to like sneak a selfie in front of Kate's rack.
Yes. And then getting in trouble.
And then getting in trouble.
Yeah.
They're like telling us you can't, because that's the This Is Us wardrobe. And we're like, why do you think we're taking the picture?
Right.
We know. Right. But you spotted it. I was just walking by.
We had been walking by these racks of clothes all day long. We kept walking back and forth out of our green room. And I thought they were just clothes for like guests, because they told us that they had a lot of wardrobe there if we needed options.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden I started noticing names on the racks and I was like, Kate. And then I think I saw Rebecca and I was like, wait a minute. And then we saw on the bathroom door, it said, This Is Us crew only or something. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is where they film
Yes.
This is us. And this is like.
So we totally fangirled out over the wardrobe.
Yes. Like touching Kate's dresses.
And it was a trip to do this during the pandemic because the masks and everybody's in masks and they're keeping us separate. And but some people were close, like not everybody was 6 feet apart. Yeah. We were put in a room together. We had both been COVID tested and tested negative, and supposedly the audience had as well. I don't think my dad was tested, though. That's interesting. Mm. I'm pretty sure he wasn't.
I specifically asked to be in a room with you, though, because I was like, I don't want to go down and be in a room with six people who I don't know if they're vaccinated. Like right, I have a kid who I can't, who's not vaccinated. I'm not. So then they were like, if you know, I said, I know Laura's vaccinated. And they were like, we can put the two of you in a room together. Then.
Yeah.
And I was like,
and okay, my dad is triple vaxxed as well. Yeah. But it was just interesting. I've been on TV sets before. I've never been on one during, like I said, the pandemic, and to see the precautions they were taking and everybody in masks up until the moment that we got on stage.
Did we walk on stage with masks?
Yeah. And then,
they took them, and then we couldn't get out of our seats until they, so we had to like stay on stage till they brought our mask back to us. Like I was impressed by kind of some of those layers of diligence I thought were good.
I thought that the masks, because they had them in these little, really pretty boxes. Mm-hmm. I thought they were chocolates for us. I was really excited. And I was like, oh, this is for, okay, never mind. But let's see what else, if I was surprised by anything else. Well, certainly what happened to us right before we went on stage, when we were waiting with the other, how they divided us from the con people. The against people, the people that were against CRT were divided from the people that were pro CRT. Dr. Sean Harper, Taylor, I can't remember her last name.
I don't remember either.
And you and I, was that it?
Yeah, it was the four of us. And they put us in one area, like a one backstage behind this little curtain.
Yeah.
And then I'm assuming the other four people were in their own.
Right.
Another one.
And then there was that person that was yelling and cursing.
Oh, yeah.
That was crazy, right? We were divided by a curtain.
Yeah, there was partition. Like crew people were having a fight that sounded like it was going to become a fist fight.
Yeah, I was like, moving away. Like,
yes. So we had this curtain around us, right? And we're literally right next to the stage. You can hear the conversation between Dr. Phil and the people who are already out there, which I think at that time it was Dr. Sean Harper had already gone out. And we can hear crew members yelling at each other, like yelling, swearing, and like telling each other to like get, they're like, you need to get out now. Like, get the F out of here.
Yeah.
Like it was. And I was like, this is going to go to blows.
This is heated. Yeah.
Yeah. And we kept like moving away. There wasn't really anywhere for us to move though. We were in this, like, it was like a closet size room, surround, but like only divided by a curtain, you know, only put together, held by a curtain.
Yeah.
It's like, if they start fighting, they're just going to rumble right through that curtain.
Right. I was not happy about that. I was like, I want to get as far away from whatever this rumpus is. I'm not a fighter. I want to get hurt.
And I think it had to do with our seating. So there was eight guests.
Yeah.
And they were talking about seating. And so I think there was some sort of conflict around who was going to be sitting on stage because they didn't have room to get all eight of us on stage.
No.
So they
that was weird.
They got six of us on stage.
Yeah.
And then Taylor, the teacher, and then the writer, oh my goodness, I have his name, James. They were seated in the like first two or three rows of the audience.
Right.
Because they didn't have enough room for eight chairs on stage.
Yeah. It seemed like they had too many guests.
Yeah. It was a lot of guests.
It was a lot of guests, which is evidenced by the edit of the show, because of the show. What? How long did we tape? Do you remember?
We taped for like, I want to say 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Wow.
And then they have to cut it down to 42.
Yeah.
Dr. Phil was exhausted.
Like,
by the time Taylor and I got out, because we came on near the end.
Yeah.
They, Dr. Phil was like, can we be done now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can just see it in his eyes.
It's just the last surprise I'll say. From being on stage and listening to the opposition. Is it Derek? Was that his name? The black guy?
Yeah, Derek.
Is that it?
Yep. I looked it up in advance this morning because I wanted to make sure we got names right. So yes.
And I might misquote you, Derek. So if you're listening, forgive me. But he said something.
Probably. He's probably not a shameless mom, just in case.
You never know.
Right.
But he said something to the effect of he hasn't been affected by racism. He can go anywhere. Mm. He can do anything.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, my mouth is actually going to hit the floor. Like my jaw is dropping. And I couldn't believe that a Black man in this day and age would say that he hadn't been impacted by racism and that he could go anywhere and do anything. And I'm sure you've seen the video of those two young eighth graders fighting in Bridgewater, New Jersey. And like, you know, the shoving starts and then they're on the ground and the white kid's on top of the Black kid and they pull the white kid off to get to the Black kid to handcuff him with their knees in their back. And the white kid takes a seat and up gets a pat on the shoulder.
Yeah.
It's just, and I don't want to get into that, but it's just another example of the disparity. Mm-hmm. And as a fair-skinned Black woman, my treatment, the impact on me of racism has been lifelong and consistent. There has rarely been a period of time where I'm allowed to forget that I'm Black in this country. Sometimes when I'm in my house by myself for a while, but otherwise, once I go out into the world, I am reminded. So I couldn't believe that he said that out loud. I think that was the most surprising thing to me. Although there were some shockingly, I'm trying to think of what the word I want to use is that's not like just ragging on them. I would say ignorant, some shockingly ignorant statements made by the opposition as well, including the people who zoomed in, which we didn't have any pro CRT people zooming in, but we did have, So what about you?
We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. So wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Do you like science fiction? I'm Carrie Bechet, and if you loved movies like Arrival or Interstellar, then you're going to want to check out my podcast, Hypothetical. On Hypothetical, we tell speculative sci-fi stories interwoven with real science. New episodes every Tuesday, available wherever you get podcasts.
Surprise, I'm going to start like more surface level and then I'll, because I want to, your points around Derek are, I totally agree. I was surprised we didn't have better food.
Right?
So in the green room, like I've heard about people being a guest, like I don't know people who've been a guest on Ellen, but I've heard about like when you're a guest on Ellen, you get like a gift basket and there's like a green room with like all these snacks. And I don't even know who I've heard this from, but like, I feel like I've heard about this. Like when you go on a talk show, you get like a little gift, like goodie bag.
Yes.
I was pretty excited about the goodie bag.
Yes. You want your swag.
And we're going to, and we walk in and we're like, we're going to be there all day. Like you're there at 8 a.m. until, I think we were there from there's 7 or 8 a.m. until 2 p.m.
Yeah.
Or so. So we walk in and there's, for each of us is like a sandwich that could have come from a mini mart in a little plastic case and a bottle of water for each of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, huh. I thought there'd be like craft services. Like, well, I'm like, shouldn't and there
not,
be a buffet?
Not to defend them, but I think because I know all my actor friends, there is no more craft services.
And it probably because of COVID.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So they don't have that, but still.
And then I also saw the same day. So of course I'm like following the Dr. Phil, like on social media and everything that day, just to kind of see what they're saying. And there, someone had shared like that they got a mug for being in the studio audience. And I'm like, oh, I'm not going to get a Dr. Phil mug. We didn't get a mug. I'm like, we literally got anything. Nothing.
Yes.
Nothing. There was, I will say, all of the crew were incredibly nice. Like yes. They could not have been nicer. And they were so gracious, which was really great because it was like a weird and uncomfortable and like such a fast paced experience.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was like, oh, I thought I would get like a tote. So that was a surprise.
Yes. I love definitely that surprise.
And I actually meant to, I don't even think I ever told you that day, but I was like, don't we get something besides a thank you? My other surprise was definitely like finding out that This Is Us shared that space. They, I think, were off season, so we didn't see anyone, but I was just like looking for like, where's Mandy Moore?
Yes, right.
That was definitely a surprise. And then I was also surprised we got no FaceTime with Dr. Phil. So people asked me like, what was it like to meet him? I never met him. Like You walk out to the stage and you were just inserted into a conversation that's already happening. And then when we were done filming, they turned off the cameras. Dr. Phil gets up and walks off and we have to sit there and wait for our masks. And so we literally like, I never had a personal like, hello, a handshake, which I would have understood not shaking hands in COVID, but like, there was nothing. There was no like, hey, come take a picture with him. There was literally no actual interaction with him, which that was, I was surprised about too, which I thought either could be COVID, which would make sense, or like he's at a place in his career where he can call all the shots and he can be like, I don't really want to talk to anyone more than unless we're recording. And right. I have no idea which it is.
I think just from, because I was, you know, I was a publicist for a while and I would take people to talk shows. Always the host would come and talk to them, regardless of who they were beforehand. Yeah. I bet you this is part of COVID protocol.
Yeah, it must be. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that part. So people were like, well, what was it like to meet him? And was he nice? And I was like, maybe. I will say, so another surprise for me kind of getting into the content of the show. So I was kind of going into it prepared to have to be defensive. Because I thought that potentially we would be positioned in a way that we were going to have to really be defending why race education should be in schools at all, let alone CRT.
Right.
And Dr. Phil, I thought, actually positioned it in a more pro CRT way than I expected. So I felt like we were walking onto the stage in a more favorable spot than I had expected. Maybe like, I thought maybe he would be neutral or maybe even a little anti-leaning.
Yeah.
And I felt like he was like even above neutral, like more on our side. And that was surprising.
And he had that whole little PowerPoint presentation about the Black people to pay attention to.
Yeah.
And that should be included in our school's curriculum.
Yeah. Like that impressed me because I didn't see that coming.
No, me either.
I 100% agree with you on Derek and was also very shocked when he said he'd never experienced racism or oppression around race. What really stood out to me about what he said was he said, and I believe Keisha, one of the guests from Moms of Liberty, who was also opposed. So she's a Black mom. She and him both brought up references around like, but look, we have President Obama and we have Oprah.
Right.
And I was blown away that they would give like the only two examples of
exactly.
like a Black woman billionaire in media is what I want to say, but like doing what Oprah does. And then one Black president, like that's not a huge win. Like, yeah, it's a win, but it's not like we're good now.
Well, yeah, it doesn't mean we live in a post-racial society because these two people happen to have achieved these different statuses. Yeah.
Right. So that piece was like, was shocking to me. The last thing I'll say about surprise is that Keisha and I were in the same room for hair and make or for makeup, and she was super nice. And I just assumed, I'm like, she's a Black mom. Obviously we're on the same side.
Yeah.
And we didn't talk a whole lot. I will say anytime I was like, I don't want to ask her what side she's on. And she probably assumes I'm anti and I'm sure she's pro. And so we just had this really like friendly conversation about like getting our makeup done. But then when we were all out on stage, I was like, oh, we're on opposite sides and the opposite of what I thought.
Totally.
And that was really shocking. And it was a reinforcement of like, Black people are not a monolith. And so I'm assuming that any Black mom is going to be on the same side as me, thinking that race education should be in schools and that we should be really looking at like, what is CRT and how do we bring it into our schools in an appropriate way? And that was absolutely not her stance.
And that was my surprise as well. I didn't get my hair and makeup done with her, but I saw her in the hallway. And the other thing that I have to say is that I really did feel like we were being produced a little in the separation of us and how they kind of, they didn't say, you know, this is just going to be a conversation, blah, blah, blah. They like jump in. We want you to be energetic. We want you to, if you have a point to make, you know, make your point. Don't wait for people to finish. Like they really, it felt to me like they wanted us, they wanted it to be more of a verbal brawl than it was, than it ended up being. And by keeping us separate and kind of keeping a mystery around what our positions were, I felt like that was part of the us being produced to come out and have this kind of, because there has to be some drama for it to be good TV, right?
Right, right.
If we both get out there and we're like, oh yeah, I see your point. Oh yeah, I see your point. Then it's kind of, it's snoozy, right? Yawn.
Yeah.
So they, I felt like, you know, because I watch a lot of reality TV.
And, same.
Yeah. And you can see like how they've been produced, like, oh, let's get these two people together now and have them have a casual, I'm putting that in air quotes, conversation. When in actuality, you know that these two people have some beef to work out, right?
Yeah.
So they, so it's just, I was a little bit surprised by that, but I was really surprised that Keisha was anti. And I would never, as a Black mom, like, I don't know any Black moms that are anti-critical race theory. Yeah. I wouldn't have guessed that there were any.
Yeah, it was super interesting. And just like another lesson for me as a white person to not make assumptions around everyone thinking the same thing, everyone being the same, everyone, you know? So, yeah. Okay, so I want to talk about takeaways from the conversation. And I want to go to, so you gave some background on kind of what critical race theory is. I want to take this definition that I found online.
Yeah.
To kind of give people just a little bit more context as we dig more into the conversation that transpired on the show.
Sure.
So people have a clear sense of what it is, because this was really what a lot of the show was about. Like, what is critical race theory actually? So critical race theory is an academic concept that is more than 40 years old. The core idea is that race is a social construct and that racism is not merely the product of individual bias or prejudice, but also something embedded in legal systems and policies. And it came from work in the late 70s, early 80s by legal scholars. And it's something that's taught at the college level. So this was actually a big part of the conversation, that critical race theory is typically, or it started out, it is a college level curriculum that is taught in a really specific way to college students, where they take a critical look and do critical analysis around race and how race is woven into systems and into like the way that society really operates. And then ultimately, intentionally or not, creates systems of oppression for Black people. So the idea of it being taught in school is what we were talking about. Like, does that get taught in school? So go ahead and add to that, Laura.
Yeah, I was just going to piggyback on that. I love that definition. And the other thing is that, you know, this is that critical race theory isn't something that can be taught. It's something that's studied, because it's a theory. And part of the theory was, you know, Africans were brought here as slaves, 400 years of slavery, blah, 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 then Jim Crow, and then civil rights. And so you're looking at, are we looking at a system that is racist, right? Is this a systemically racist country? And if so, did changing the laws in, during the civil rights movement, the Voting Rights Act, the Brown versus the Board of Education, did those things eliminate or impact racism? And that's a big piece of what they study.
Yeah.
It's like you take, you have, you know, coloreds only, white only, you take those signs down, does racism go away? And so that's one of the things they're looking at. And you're absolutely right. It would never be studied in, you know, a K through 12 school. It's not anything that can be taught. And it's also something that's primarily studied. It is at the university level, but also primarily in law school. Mm-hmm. These are people who are studying the law to see if laws impact racism, basically. Right. None of that I knew before we went on the show.
None of that.
So what's,
it's funny because I didn't share earlier, but I was literally like on the plane, like Googling, researching, like on my way to the hotel in the car that they sent for me, like Googling. I mean, like literally from the time I said yes to the time I like got on stage, I was like, oh my God, I need to know as much as I possibly can, because it seemed like a heavy responsibility to get out there and talk about this. And I did, wanted to do it justice. And I, the more I dug into it, the more I was like, this is not being taught. Like no kindergartners are like analyzing critical race theory.
Right.
But when we got on stage, the moms of Liberty, who the three moms, Tiffany, Amy, and Keisha, they were like, yeah, yep, being taught in kindergarten. I mean, they were very much like critical race is absolutely being taught in elementary schools.
Right.
Like, this is, I don't even know that I can participate in this conversation because it's not like they're not, while they're learning their ABCs, also talking about like legal systems around race.
Right.
It's just not happening. So at times it felt like we were having really different, like we weren't all even in the same conversation.
Yeah.
And there wasn't room to clarify that the idea of critical race theory being taught in school is been so like incorrect or so misconstrued.
Yes.
And so I think my position was not about critical race theory as the actual thing being taught in schools as much as like race education needs to be taught in school. Like history needs to be taught in an accurate way and not eliminating pieces of our history that make white people look bad or that, you know, that ignore actual things that happened.
Mm-hmm. Two things. Steve Bannon kind of famously wrote that the path to the White House is through the school boards. Mm-hmm. And so the idea being thrown around by several people, several scholars, academics who are studying this, politicians, journalists, is that CRT was introduced at the school board level to divide people and incite and activate the conservative base. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they know it's not critical race theory, but if they call it that, it's like, you know, lighting a stick of dynamite and people will fall, you know, really heavily on one side or another. You divide the school board, you incite the base, and then there's your path to the White House. Mm. So I thought that was really
interesting. I did not know that piece.
Yeah.
And
isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I mean, and disgusting.
Yeah. And then in the New York Times, the Sunday New York Times this past week, there was an article about all these teachers who are losing their jobs for teaching anything that falls under the umbrella of race. And there's this really specific definition that one of the governors, I think it's New Hampshire, gave, which is basically, and it says this, and I wish I brought it with me. It's in the other room, but it says you can't teach anything that's going to make the students feel uncomfortable. He's like, you can teach about race. You can talk about race and civil rights and slavery, but anything that makes the children feel uncomfortable, you can't talk about. And, you know, what's not being said there is white children,
mm-hmm.
right? You can't make right. white children feel uncomfortable. And so that line that needs to be walked by our teachers now, because of this big, it's not just a misunderstanding because it's intentional. Like someone right. intentionally, this propaganda, I guess, that's been accepted so widely by mm-hmm. so many Americans as truth, as facts, right? And because of that now, teachers are afraid to lose their jobs. So yeah. do they teach about racism and teach race, you know, race-based history, or do they, you know, stick to subjects that don't make the students uncomfortable and keep their jobs? And that's what it's coming down to. It was 3 pages in the New York Sunday Times.
What's interesting about that, that was actually set on stage, that was illuminating to me, was, I believe Keisha said it, and I don't remember who, and I think it was backed up by Tiffany and Amy, the moms of Liberty. But
I'm sorry, every time you say
that, I like roll my eyes every time I say it. But, so, and they very, I think Tiffany's maybe the founder of Moms of Liberty. She like founded
so.
This
yeah.
whole organization. Yes, the Moms of Liberty, who don't want to talk about race in school. So what Keisha said, which made sense to me, and this was actually one of my like takeaways and kind of a surprise, but also a takeaway, that there was actually some places where there was alignment where I was like, yeah, you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. So one of the things she said was, I don't want my children being taught that they're oppressed. Like that does not, that's racism to tell my Black kids that they're oppressed people in society. And I was like, yeah, I don't want your Black kids being taught that they're oppressed either. Like mm-hmm. that's not helpful. And then the white argument is, I don't want my white kids being taught that they are oppressors.
Right.
And so what was interesting to me is this assumption, I think it's an assumption, that race education is being taught in a way that would in a classroom come across that like, hey, white kids in the class, you are already born as an, you are an oppressor innately by birth. Mm-hmm. You are all oppressors. And Black kids in here, you are all being oppressed already. Like, I just don't think that's the way that it's anything race is being taught. Like, I could be wrong. It's certainly not the way it's taught in my kids' school. And so like that piece was really surprising to me because, yeah, I don't want that it being taught that way either. I think there's a way to look at history in a way that doesn't set our children up to already be looking at themselves as either oppressor or oppressee.
Yeah, I think that any educational institution that would teach that would be setting it up to fail. It would almost seem intentional, right?
Right.
Like if we're going to teach you this, that you're oppressed and that you're the oppressor, which means that no one is going to allow this. So then we're just going to scrub all teachings about racism and race education, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to scrap it because we tried, you know, we tried. And I heard, you know, some really horrifying things about like reenactments in a way that made these, you know, 5-year-old white children act out being the oppressors and the 5-year-old Black children act out being oppressed, which would be completely inappropriate, like you said, and, and damaging, quite frankly.
Absolutely.
But I have not, I mean, I heard them talk about it. I haven't really heard of anything like that happening in anybody's school that I know.
And this is where I feel like it got a little dicey because they are like, this is happening. And I'm like, can you tell me the school? Like which school at what time of day?
Yeah.
Because it seemed like it didn't seem real to me. And when Amy was so insistent, critical race theory is absolutely being taught. And I'm like, okay, but where?
And it's and it's not something that can be taught.
I just think, it was that part was really interesting to me.
It was frustrating.
It was so frustrating.
It was frustrating because we couldn't talk about the real issue.
Right.
So the real issue is not critical race theory and where it's being taught and how, because it's a non-issue for most of America.
Right.
The logistics around how critical race theory is being studied will impact almost none of us realistically on a day to day. But race education, diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice work is now being swept in with this, you know, this theory that's studied at a very, very, you know, what's the word I'm looking for, Sarah? It's a very small portion of the population that's ever going to study this, but this all of the work that I do and that others like me do is now being swept up with that. But, you know, they are lumping it all in together so that they can get rid of it, basically, and say and condemn it under that umbrella.
And they're turning it into something it's really undermining because it's being turned into something that it's not. It's a whole false narrative. I mean, it feels like this whole creation of a false narrative.
Yes.
So that to put people in a position of like, oh my God, we would never want that in schools. Like, and it's like, yeah, but that's not the thing that's actually in schools. Like, we don't even need to have the conversation.
But then, you know, and that's why Steve Bannon, whatever else he is, that's a brilliant thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, is to basically place something in the hopper that,
That incites a movement.
Incites a movement and creates a sure path to the White House for conservatives.
Yep.
I'm sure there will be more. And we'll watch, you and I will watch what else is brought to school boards that further divides the country. And, you know, I'm sure if we, you know, pulled at those threads, it would be the same type of thing, but nobody's going to, because all they hear are certain 2 or 3 buzzwords and they're off and running.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. 100%.
Very much like masks.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It really is. It's 2 or 3 buzzwords, a couple headlines on Fox News. And then they're like, we got all we need. We know. Do you think the conversation resolved anything for people watching in the audience?
Well, you know, that poll he did on the iPads at the beginning, unless they were lying, it was like, you know, was it like 25% thought they understood what CRT was at the beginning?
Yeah.
And then it was in the 60s.
Yeah. So it like flipped. So it seemed like the audience had a better understanding.
Yeah.
I felt like it was just kind of a mess. I guess I felt like from my own perspective, like I had a better understanding of a whole lot of things. I didn't feel like for people watching, if they came in knowing little to nothing, that they would leave being like, now I know where I stand on this or how to speak about it intelligently.
Right.
I felt like it was kind of a disaster of a conversation that like people could be like, yeah, I know more.
Right.
Or I know something. But I don't know that people walked away being able to say like, here's how I could go talk to my school about this, or here's how I could talk about this in my community in a way that's actually productive or supportive. And that piece was a little disappointing to me. And I think it was just like, there wasn't time for that, that we didn't like, there wasn't time to actually get to consensus. And maybe we would have never gotten to consensus anyways.
Right. But I do feel like something you alluded to earlier, I feel like we kind of got on the same page with, what was the white mom's name? I forgot her name.
Amy.
Mm-hmm. And Keisha. I feel like, and maybe even Derek too, that race should be studied in the classroom, but not in this incendiary way where it makes people feel bad about themselves.
Right.
And that's still dicey for me. Like, I think somebody is going to feel bad. They shouldn't feel bad about themselves.
That's so subjective. You can't control. Yeah.
But I do think it's really important. And you made this point for especially young white men to be aware of the impact that their ancestors had on young or just Black people or minorities, marginalized people, period, in this country, and how they can do better.
Yeah.
Not that they're doing anything wrong at ages 5, 6, and 7, but historically, this is what's been done. These are the acts that have been perpetrated against these different people, including women. And this is how we could do better in the future. And I said this in the in my package in the beginning. I think Germany does that really well with the Holocaust. You know, it's studied there. People go to the camps, they pack a suitcase, imagining if they only had, you know, 20 minutes to leave everything and go hide somewhere for years. And they experience it. And then they, well, I mean, there's this whole neo-Nazi movement rising there now. But
there is acceptance of universal truths, but I think there's not acceptance of universal truths here.
Thank you. It's so true. Yeah. So I do think it was a mess, but I do think that we all agreed that race education should be studied in school. We could not agree on CRT because we had very different definitions of it.
Right. Oh my goodness. Oh, so many good things in here. I want to talk about this for like a whole nother hour. But don't worry, I'm not going to keep you since I have another interview in just a minute. This was so good, Laura. Is there anything else you want to leave people with before I brag about your show for a minute?
Oh my goodness. I just think that for me, going on the show was an exciting and scary proposition. But with you there by my side as my friend and my ally, I was not nervous, not one little bit the whole time. And so I just want to say how much I appreciate you saying yes, shooting the video, getting the COVID test, coming down to be in the green room with me and be there, because I was scared of how it might turn out. And the moment I saw your face, all the fear went away. And so, you know, it's that thing where I might look at you across the room without knowing you, and you would be the unexpected ally, right? I would make an assessment of the way you look, and maybe that you're from the Pacific Northwest, and decide, okay, you belong in this category. You and I aren't going to align on all these things. And like you said, Black people aren't a monolith and neither are white people. I think that's more widely accepted, but I have, you know, a way of assessing people that would have put you in a different category. And boy, you just turned out to be one of my best and strongest allies. And I so appreciate you.
Oh my goodness. You're making me cry here. I feel like I felt the same, because I was like, I could get eaten alive in this conversation. And I was like, but I know Laura will hold my hand if I do. So I felt a lot of that too. Oh my goodness. And I'm so grateful for the invitation and just the massive amount of trust that you placed in inviting me to join you. It was like such a great life experience for so many reasons. So I'm so grateful.
We had so much fun.
Oh my gosh. So much fun. And I still, your dad.
Oh my dad, Dr. Ronald Cathcart, turns 82 next week. So shout out to him.
Love him. That was so fun. Laura. Okay. Thank you for being here and having this conversation. It was really fun and really, it was actually really enlightening too, to relive a lot of that experience with you. You have a podcast, The Only One in the Room, and it is so good. And it's all everyone's only one stories. And so it started with your only one story of being the only Black woman in the room at a writing conference for 600 writers a few years ago. And since then, you've had so many people come on the show and share their only one stories. And every week you have guests come on to say, I was the only one in this certain situation. And I love your show. I'm such a huge fan of it. Can you tell people anything you want to say about the show and then where they can find you, find the show, stalk you online and all that stuff?
Yes. And I will just say that we've had one guest at least twice who's absolutely incredible. That would be you. So you have to check out Sarah Dean's episode.
I was like, oh, who? I'll go listen.
But yeah, it's the only one in the room. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. I am the host creator. I host it along with my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun. And he's my partner in that and my partner in life. And we are a storytelling podcast. People come on and tell their stories. We're not a how-to. We're not a business profile. People come on and tell their stories of feeling like they're the only one in the room, in order that less people can feel like the only one in the room. Because once they hear that person's story, there's connection. So thank you for that shout out. I'm at Laura Cathcart Robbins on Instagram. Cathcart is C-A-T-H-C-A-R-T. Robbins was with two B's and an S. And Laura Standard Spelling. And then the only one in the room on Instagram. We're just about to hit 30,000 followers. So excited.
Beating me.
Oh my, sorry. We're at 29, like four or something. Nice. So please follow. So, because when we hit 30, I bought a Farrah Fawcett wig for me and a 70s porn star wig for Scotty. And we're going to do a happy dance for IG.
I cannot wait. Oh my gosh. I can't wait.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you. This was so fantastic. I adore you. And you'll be my next guest to hit four times when you come back.
Yes.
When you come back for your book, which we didn't even talk about, but you'll be back on here talking about the book.
Stash 2023, Simon & Schuster.
Oh, cannot wait. Okay, yes. Laura, I love you and I'll talk
love
to you
soon.
Love
you too.
Oh, hun, let's not forget our Patreon shout out.
Oh, no. We have some really good ones.
Yeah, we got some new ones.
We have some new ones.
Yeah, welcome to the crew.
But first we have our OG Patreon, Rose Pricks Podcast.
It's still the only way I watch The Bachelor.
So The Bachelor this season has been a wild ride full of lies, deceptions, and unknowns. That's good stuff.
Yeah, that's a good recipe. Yeah.
Something. And if you have a love-hate relationship with The Bachelor, then the podcast Rose Pricks is for you.
Uh-huh.
Fellow comedians Angel Laquita Moore and our very own Stephanie Wilder Taylor.
Stephanie.
They dissect the drama, plus have important discussions on race, mental health, and feminism. But most of all, they keep it real. Real funny, that is.
Yep, they do. Hilarious.
New episodes drop Monday night or Tuesday morning if they're too tired.
I love that.
Right? So find them anywhere you listen to your podcasts.
All right, honey. So tell us, who is our next Patreon that we're shouting out today?
We have a new patron in Mercedes Cusick LMFT. So excited about this. She's our friend and a supporter of the show, and we love her family.
Mercedes.
She is a licensed trauma therapist and certified EMDR therapist.
All right. You're going to tell me more about that, right?
Yeah. What that means that she's had advanced training in complex and developmental trauma, and she's doing something pretty incredible. It's called EMDR Intensives.
Hmm.
So this is a concierge curated program that's just for you, anyone who's listening. EMDR intensives range from half a day to several days and are the equivalent of, get this, 2 to 6 months of weekly therapy.
Wow. So what I'm understanding is that these intensives allow you to unpack the past and the pain without having to deal with everyday life stuff like carpools, morning meetings, presentations,
exactly,
stuff like that.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly, hon. Yeah. So Mercedes EMDR intensives allow you to update old narratives about how you get to show up in the world, who you are, and what you deserve.
Right. And these intensive formats, they decrease treatment time and they save you a lot of money in the long run.
They do. Mm-hmm. They do. So if you want to start feeling better now, and why wouldn't you, then EMDR intensives are the way to go. And California residents, click the link in our show notes to find the link to Mercedes Cusick's website and book your EMDR intensive today.
Yeah, and don't live with the pain of the past traumas any longer than you have to.
Mm-hmm.
Mercedes Cusick, LMFT, licensed trauma therapist, is located in Woodland Hills, California. Her website is www.mercedescusick.com. That's MercedesCusick.com.
Nice spelling, hon.
Thanks, hon. So, who's next?
Yeah, our final shout out of the day is for our friend Kathleen Hahn.
Oh, Kathleen, one of my favorite fans.
She is. And I was just saying that she's like been the official like secret taster of all our recipes before.
I mean, honey, we've been running everything kind of by her as it comes out.
Yes. From the very inception of the podcast to where we are now, she's always been a great fan, a great supporter. I think she wrote one of our first reviews on Apple Podcasts.
She did, didn't she? Yeah.
Yeah. And thank you so much, Kathleen, for joining our Patreon. Shout out to you. And we're going to hear more about Kathleen next month. So stay tuned. Thank you so much for listening.
The Only One in the Room is produced by the creative genius that is Scott Slaughter and edited by the uber-talented polymath Christina Barcy and her team at Avon House Productions. Hey, you're still listening? Good. Please subscribe right now while you're thinking about it, quick, before you forget. And be sure to like and leave us a review of the show. Want to connect with some other Only One listeners? Be sure to join our private Only One in the Room Facebook group or check out Patreon on our website for exclusive content that you won't find anywhere else. And do you have an Only One in the Room story that you'd like to share? Please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.